Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It is Monday, February 19th, 2024, and you are listening to episode 181 of the Midnight Film Society podcast. I'm your host, Damian Sherman. Joining me today is...
Derek McDuff.
On today's show, the movie news is coming fast and furious. We've got movie trailers for the Super Bowl, casting announcements for the Fantastic Four movie, TV trailers for X-Men 97 and The Sympathizer. After that, we'll get into some what we've been watching, including Lisa Frankenstein, Madame Web, and Wim Wenders' Perfect Days, and checking in with my Best Picture winner, Marathon. Finally, we'll go over our Letterboxd assignments. Write to the show, midnightfilmsociety@gmail.com, Bicycle on Twitter, subscribe on Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts, Spotify, rate and review it on Apple Podcasts, tell a friend, family member, or stranger. What's up, man? How we doing?
Good. A little tired. This is the second podcast in a row that I've recorded because I had to reschedule some things because of my day job. But yeah, I drank an energy drink before the first podcast, so hopefully that lets me power through this one.
Yeah. Do you prefer doing a podcast back to back? Do you prefer doing one one at a time and then resting?
I usually like to do one at a time, but you know, this reminds me like the early days when we would just do three in a row. So you know, this is good. Yeah, this is good. I'm liking it. You know, I have to do a little less work on this one, which is always nice. You get to do most of the work, and I get to chill. I start with the first one on my show, and then I end with this one. So yeah, I like it. I kind of like it. I'm digging it.
Yeah, because I always wonder if you like, coming in cold, this is the one I'm doing today. This is the only one. So, you know, I usually feel like my throat's a little, too rested. It's a little rusty. I was put the notes together and doing the intro. It always feels like forever since I did a last one. So, yeah, I might prefer to have like a warm up podcast, do a rough draft.
You got to do those vocal exercises.
Yes,
you gotta
exactly.
He thrusts his fist against the post and still insists he sees the ghost, you know, like those kind of things.
Yeah, red leather, yellow leather. Exactly.
all those good improv warm-ups.
Yeah. What's it called? The Zip Zop Zap? I don't even know what it is. I just know the name of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know what it is? Good I've never done it. Have you?
Oh yeah, I was a theater major. I did all of that shit. You know
what is Zip Zap Zap?
The real?
Can you summarize it for us?
It's hard on a visual medium, but like you know, you'll be standing in a circle. You'll say zip, and you'll shoot it to someone else. Someone else will be like zip, and they'll shoot it to someone else. And then it comes to you, and they just zapped it over to me. And you kind of like do this like hand slidey thing, you know?
Yeah, interesting. Did you ever do the brain meld thing? Or is it called brain meld? Where you go 1, 2, 3. Both people say a word, and then you have to like come together. And let's say I say like bat, and I say bat, you say like ball. So the next word we would probably say was baseball, something like that. You ever do that game?
No, I did not do that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Brain meld, something like that. Yeah. It's pretty fun. But anyways, let's get to the big game happened this past Sunday. Did you watch the big game? Did you have any money on the big game?
I did. Well, I always have a recurring bet with one of my friends and it's not for money, but it's for the loser has to watch a bad movie. We pick a different one every year. I've won the last 2 years, but this year I was not rooting for the Chiefs. I was rooting for the Niners. So I have to watch The Postman. I had that bet, and then I also had a bet where if a scoregami happened, which for people who don't know is a score in football that has never happened before. Mm-hmm. So if a scoregami would have hit, I bet $10. I would have won, I think, like $200, which of course it was a very normal, boring ass score. So no scoregami for me.
Did you watch The Postman yet, or no?
I have not watched it yet. No, not yet. I had too much other shit to watch this last week.
Gotcha. Yeah, directed by Kevin Costner from 1997. Mm-hmm. Screenplay by this guy that keeps popping up everywhere because he writes a lot of screenplays. Eric Roth helps write the screenplay.
Eric Roth, yeah.
Yeah,
I just saw Thanksgiving that he did.
Oh, really? Wow.
Was that him? Was that Eric Roth?
I'm not sure.
Or am I thinking of someone else?
Eli Roth.
Eli Roth. That's okay. Well, you can see where I did that.
Something Roth.
But
yes,
exactly. Eric Roth. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Eric Roth. Okay. Yeah. He did Forrest Gump. He did Benjamin Button, Good Shepherd, yes. Killers of the Flower Moon.
All those movies. Yep.
Insider. So, yeah, a lot of solid ones. So,
yeah, not only but
maybe this won't be as bad as I thought.
Yeah, maybe. You and 123 million other people watched the Super Bowl this past Sunday. One of the biggest, one of the biggest viewing things ever. One of the biggest viewing events ever. Second only to the moon landing. Apparently, I had no idea the football, and I had no idea people still watch things over traditional TV that could get to those, could reach those heights.
So, because the game, unlike most years, was actually on two channels. So are they combining the numbers from both channels? Do you know?
I have no idea. Nobody knows.
Do you know why it was on two channels, Damien?
Do I know why it was in two channels? Licensing, greed, capitalism. I'm guessing one of those reasons.
Yeah. Well, yes, but I mean, okay. There's a specific where there was a difference between the two simulcasts. What it was?
No, tell me.
Okay, so the big stations always switch off every 3 or 4 years, between NBC and CBS and Fox, whatever, between who gets to play the Super Bowl. And this year it just happened to be on CBS, which is also the parent company of Nickelodeon. And I don't know if you've noticed, but the past couple of years, every once in a while, Nickelodeon will put on a football game. And this year was the first time ever that the Super Bowl was also on Nickelodeon. So you better believe that I fucking watched SpongeBob and Patrick talk about the goddamn Super Bowl. And as the stadium got transported from Las Vegas to Bikini Bottom, we got Dora the Explorer explaining to us what a holding penalty was. Yes. It was immaculate. It was so great.
Amazing. So yeah, it was simulcast on there, and also apparently Telemundo, Univision. Sorry, Univision. It was simulcast on Univision as well. Yeah, CBS and Paramount Plus streaming platform, which also simulcast in Spanish and Univision, as well as the kid-centric telecast on Nickelodeon. So yeah, that's incredible. I mean, it's big numbers for the U.S. Big numbers for one specific thing. But of course it's like the eighth largest thing in the world, right? I think soccer, it's known throughout the world as football, beats that out. I think each Olympic year beats that out as well. I think cricket also beats out the Super Bowl, worldwide, but America, go America. We have 123 million.
That's the thing I don't get. It's like, oh, it's supposed to be not as big as those, but then it's also the biggest thing since the moon landing. So I don't really get how that makes any sense.
I mean, 1969, how many other countries had TVs, right? I think that's what they're trying to say.
But like, yeah, but no, it's saying it's the biggest thing since then, right? But then if those other things were bigger than it, like, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me.
The audience for the Super Bowl was so large that it approached the all-time watched television broadcast set in 1969. Yeah, so it's –
it's bigger than those cricket things. And still, so what you just said was incorrect?
So it approached the all-time most watched television broadcast. I think it means – I don't know, man.
So that means it's bigger than cricket. If it's the all-time biggest broadcast, even approaching the moon landing, then that would imply that it was bigger than the World Cup.
Yes, true.
I mean,
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. So there's that. Congratulations to the winners of that game.
Boo
to them.
Boo.
Okay.
Congratulations to Patrick Mahomes and Taylor Swift for winning the Super Bowl, and Andy Reid, who I actually like. Andy Reid.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Good.
Big
for
red.
Them. Yes. We had.
I know you're just like, you're such a hipster. Like, I don't watch the sports ball, Derek.
Do you have any comments on the winners of this game? About the game? How it went.
I hate the fucking Chiefs, man. They need to stop winning so much. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I liked the Chiefs when they were going up against like the Patriots like 5 years ago, because the Patriots were the one who fucking won everything all the time, and the Chiefs were the underdogs. But now, like, now the Chiefs are the ones who win everything all the time and date like the most famous people in the world, and it's just like, dude, I get it. Like, I don't need any more Chiefs. Can someone else win a fucking Super Bowl? Like, and like, you know, you have like these juggernauts, and then you have them going up against the Niners, who's a team that, like, me being a Rams fan, I don't really like that much. But like, Jimmy Garoppolo literally was the last player picked in the NFL draft. Literally, of all the players drafted that year, he was the last player picked. So his nickname was Mr. Irrelevant, which is the name that they always give to that last pick. And he was playing in the fucking Super Bowl. He's barely getting paid any money because he was only there because the guy they traded for, Jimmy Garoppolo, got injured. But no, like, fucking whatever. Like, just, I don't know, man. He lost. It was a really good game.
Okay.
Kyle Shanahan can't fucking protect a lead. He's had 3 leads in the Super Bowl. Yeah. If it wasn't for him, Matt Ryan would have a ring. Anyway.
All right. So that's, Intrepid sports reporter Derek McDuff. Thank you for that.
Yep. Beep, 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 beep. I've got a little ticket in my hat. Ah, I just saw the game. the NFL game. Championship.
The championship. All right. And there were some commercials during the Super Bowl. We got some movie and TV commercials during the big game. Teases for Wicked, Deadpool, and Wolverine, and much, much more. What was your favorite trailer during the Super Bowl?
Well, I didn't see all of these because I was watching the Nickelodeon cast, and some of the trailers were the same, but not all of them were. And also, I hate trailers, so like I was like, you know, not super invested in trying to watch them anyway. So I didn't see the Deadpool one. I did see Wicked, which looked bad. I did see Twisters, which looked dumb and fun. And then I did see later on the X-Men one. So I guess the X-Men one was cool because I have like a lot of nostalgia for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you were like 3 when that came out, right? You were like still in the womb?
No, what? It came out in 97, right?
Yeah.
X-Men 97. Yeah, so I was 7.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the name of it.
I watched it as a kid.
That's the name of it. I don't think it
actually
came out.
That's when it was on, right? Hold on.
X-Men TV show, X-Men cartoon, X-Men the animated series. Is that, that's not the
original. X-Men the animated series.
Is that the name of it?
Ran 5 seasons. Okay, from 93 to 97. So I guess, yeah, I was 3, but, you know, like, there was reruns and shit. Like, I definitely, like, the original MCU, right? Was, like, because, like, Spider-Man would show up, and, like, the X-Men would show up on his show, and then fucking, you know, Captain America would be there. Like, that was my MCU, like, as a wee baby Derek.
Yes, one of the best theme songs ever in a show in the 90s. Yes. So that's cool. I was looking forward to that.
Don't copyright infringe us. That was actually just us singing. That wasn't just playing the actual theme song. I know it was hard to tell, but
we're
that good.
Yeah, so it looks interesting. They have a thing that they broke down a couple of screenshots from it. One of them was them taking out the GAT. Do you know what the GAT is? Do you know?
No, man.
What a GAT?
Like a Gatling gun?
The GAT.
A Gatling gun?
GYAT. They removed Rogue's GAT, her butt. They reduced Rogue's buttocks from the original.
She did have a...
Oof! She did hit a wolf. Ugh.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Woo.
Yeah.
Yeah, she had one of those. No. So they reduced that. Another screenshot somebody looked at was the fact that, what's his name? What's the guy that throws the cards? Gambit. He does, like, basically Gambit. Anything he touches turns to, like, kinetic energy, and it explodes, like, you know, whatever kinetic energy does, right?
I know how Gambit works.
Sure, but I'm telling the people, in case the people don't know.
The people
how Gambit works.
Gambit's a man of the people. He's a Creole from the South.
He is. So during the end of this commercial, you have Gambit supercharging Wolverine's claws. Now, either if he's supercharging his claws, that's one thing. But if he's supercharging and putting so much energy into his body and to his bones, that means that his bones become like a nuclear bomb, and that's not good. So the few seconds after what the clip we saw from the trailer, Wolverine is just going to go pow, gonna go boom.
Yeah, I did think of that because I was like, wait, so is his skeleton just gonna blow up because that's how his powers work? I fucking hate that shit of like, look at this, we captured this boulder, just fucking watch the show. Like, you don't need to like overanalyze a fucking 2-second thing. Like, just watch the show. They're gonna release it. You'll see. They're gonna release it,
yes.
That's why I feel like that's like the ultimate thing of like me not liking trailers is just the extremes that people go to of like, we've gotta overanalyze exactly what the fuck this means. Is that you see this? There's a reflection off of his glasses, and it's like, who the fuck cares? Just watch the actual fucking show.
I care. I fucking who cares.
Oh my god, you're hopeless.
We got Wicked. We got a trailer for Wicked, the musical that they did not advertise as being a musical. They also did not advertise this as being a part one, as they
right.
Want
I
to
thought
do.
That was weird.
Yeah, it is very weird, right?
Well, they didn't do that. They, I guess they didn't advertise Dune as being part one
exactly,
either, right?
Exactly. That's the one they've been pointing to as being similar to this. So it looks interesting. I'm not a musical guy. Like you've talked about being a drama nerd. You've talked about being in drama class. Have you seen Wicked? Do you know of the musical Wicked?
I was a theater major for few semesters, so I knew enough annoying people to know the plot of Wicked. I don't know, man. I don't give a shit about Wicked.
You don't give a shit about Wicked. Okay, we can move on then.
I give zero fucks about Wicked.
Yeah. Do you give zero fucks about Twisters? Because Twisters was a seminal movie of my childhood, as was yours, right? We talked about the last time with
Twister. I mean, Twister was a bad movie, but it was fun, and it was cool to see in the theater. But like, you know, like. I mean, Bill Putnam's not coming back, you know, so like...
Are you a fan of Glenn Powell?
Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah. We got Daisy Edgar Jones in here. We have directed by Lee Isaac Chung from Minari, who apparently he was attached to this project. He became attached to this project because he was originally going to do a live-action version of Your Name, originally in 2020, replacing Mark Webb as director, but that fell apart, so... That's why we got him directing this. Very strange. You know, it's like Chloe Zhao. Yeah, it's like Chloe Zhao directing The Eternals after doing Nomadland. So it should be interesting to see if we get a better big budget version of that, right?
Sure. I mean, like, this is a legacy sequel with none of the people who were in the first one. Like,
well, so far, we don't
know. Is Cary Elwes coming back? Is
Helen Hunt could be in here.
I mean, it's going to be hard for two of the three of them to come back. Like, you know, I don't think Bill Paxton or Philip Seymour Hoffman is going to make an appearance in this one.
I don't think so. Yeah, no. I
don't think even a flashback will happen.
Yeah,
unless it's some kind of CGI Grand Moff Tarkin nightmare fuel.
Or what did they do in Ghostbusters Afterlife? They had a little hand, right? Or did they do a whole forced ghost thing with what's his name, the guy that died from Ghostbusters?
Harold Ramis?
Yeah.
No idea. I didn't see that fucking movie.
You didn't see Afterlife? It was actually good. It was actually a lot better.
No, why would I watch that?
It was actually better than it advertised. So, we also got Inside Out 2, Inside Out Part 2. Excited for this?
I am actually very excited for this. It was on my most anticipated list because love the first one. It's one of my favorite. Yes. The first one's one of my favorite films of the 2010s. So very excited for this. I'm a big Pixar guy. So
yeah, and we are speaking of a list of things that we were excited for. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes got a trailer during the Super Bowl, so super excited for that as well.
Yep. Very stoked on that one. Did not watch the trailer. Am not going to watch the trailer unless I see it in a movie theater.
Then we got Deadpool and Wolverine. This should be interesting. Just going to talk about this. If you don't want to hear about this, you can take your headphones off.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Bye-bye, he says.
All right. Let me know when I can come back.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So Deadpool and Wolverine. We got some little bit of teases. I mean, he's going to be in the TVA. We got... the guy from Succession playing Morbius, the Morbius stand-in here, should be pretty cool. Matthew McFadden is going to be in here. We got some Ryan Reynolds. We got some characters in here. Marvel Jesus is what he says he's going to be. There were some characters in here that I don't have their names pulled up. So Deadpool and Wolverine looked interesting. Okay, all set, buddy. Even though there was nothing.
Oh, I even, all right. Yes, hey, okay,
nothing,
man.
Nothing I even spoiled, but that's fine. Also, Kung Fu Panda Part 4. We got that Part 4, and we got Despicable Me Part 4. So there's that trailer for those two things there.
DreamWorks and
Illumination.
Illumination.
Yes, sir.
Going at it.
We got Quiet Place Day 1, which I thought Quiet Place Part 2 was decent. Was there? Why am I thinking there was another Quiet Place thing that they were teasing? Before
I don't know. There's 1, 2, and now this one.
1, 2, and this one. Yeah, Lupita Nyong'o. We got Joseph Quinn, who we'll talk about in a second here, and Alex Wolff and Digimon. How do you say his name? Digimon Hansu.
Because he was in 2. Is he coming back for this one?
Yes, he is. Yep.
Okay, that's interesting, especially given what we know what happens to that character in 2.
Yeah. Directed by Michael Cernowski of Pig fame, of the Nicolas Cage film.
Really?
Pig.
So
yes.
Krasinski's not directing it? Because it felt like he made it day one so he could come back and be in it. That's interesting. Because he directed 2. That's weird.
He did direct 2.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Yes. Maybe he'll make it a cameo appearance. But yeah, as far as we know, he's not in that one.
Well, I thought he was going to be like the main character in it, because he's like the main, he directs and is the main character 1.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was the whole reason he was doing it as a prequel, so that he could be the main character again, but I might be wrong about that.
Yeah, we will see. So those are the trailers that debuted there. And then we got some news, some fantastic news, if you will, of Fantastic Four. Fantastic Four casting. Do you want to be spoiled for this? Or I already texted you about this.
I don't think casting is spoiling anything, just knowing who's in the movie. So I think
All right. So, if you're already spoiled
Unless they're like the cast of like, you know, Doctor Strange in this movie is this person, and you're like, what? That would be maybe spoiler, but like the fact that the Fantastic Four are in the Fantastic Four movie, not so much a spoiler.
We got Fantastic Four. If you don't want to be spoiled for the news, skip forward a few minutes. The characters go as following. We got Pedro Pascal, which there was some rampant rumors about that, so that wasn't really a huge deal. Pedro Pascal will be playing Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic. Vanessa Kirby as Sue Storm, aka the Invisible Woman. Joseph Quinn.
I really like that casting.
Yeah, Vanessa Kirby. Yep, she was very good in the Mission Impossible movie. She was good in Hobbs and Shaw. Very good in the Pieces of a Woman. The Netflix film she was in, she was very good in that. And then one of the biggest surprises of the casting news was Joseph Quinn as Johnny Storm, aka the Human Torch. That was I don't think his name was bandied about very much for that one. Then we got Eben Moss Baccarat, cousin himself, playing Ben Grimm. Here's the thing, Ben Grimm.
Cousin, it's Quabrin time.
So there's that. They swapped the release date. So with the announcement here on the Variety.com, they said Disney swapped the release dates of the Fantastic Four that is now set for July 25th, 2025, and Thunderbolts, which is now set for May 2nd, 2025. So there's that release dates for those two things. It'd be pretty interesting. What do you think? What do you make of the names there? Casting of that.
That's some really good casting. Like that is some like spot on casting. I like Pedro Pascal more than like Krasinski, definitely, because I know that was the big rumor for like a long time.
Yeah.
But I think Pascal's great. Like I said, Joe Quinn, just really great. Loved him as Eddie Munson on Stranger Things. You got Cousin as the Thing. That feels pretty great. And then, I'm very stoked for Vanessa Kirby. I'm a really big fan of hers in the Mission Impossible movies. And it's also cool to be like, hey, this is incidental, but the Fantastic Four were created by Jack Kirby. Now we got a Kirby in the cast, so that's nice.
Very cool. We got Matt Shackman from WandaVision and Monarch Legacy of Monsters directing Fantastic Four from a screenplay by Josh Friedman, Jeff Kaplan, and Ian Springer. So that's interesting. Yeah, should be pretty cool. Let's see. So that, moving on, we got a new Oscar category was announced this week. Not for this upcoming ceremony, not for next year's, but for the Oscar ceremonies of 2026. New casting. It's going to be a best casting. So that's pretty much going to make up for, it's going to fill the slot that was left by things like the best sound. Best sound was smooshed together, the two best sounds. One was like best mixing, one was best editing. They combined those two. So that left a free spot there. So that'll be filled by best casting starting in 2026. Should be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. Should have been best stunts. Like, it should. That's the Oscar that I'm waiting for is best stunts. And this is, the first new Oscar since 2001, I believe, when they added a best animated feature. So, I mean, this is cool, but it's not, I don't think, what people really wanted.
Yeah, best stunts or best, action choreography, best action coordination, mm-hmm. something along those lines would be cool. Yeah, absolutely. There's that. Let's get to what we've been watching. We watched a bunch of stuff over the past couple of weeks. Detective Night Country, episode 5, dropped last Friday to not compete with the Super Bowl. They usually debut those on Sundays. Still very good. It's going to be a 6-episode season. So we got one more. I don't know if we ever talked about True Detective. Did you watch season 1?
I did not. I think we brought it up. You always bring it up, and I'm always just like, I need to watch that at some point.
Yeah, it's executive produced by McConaughey and Harrison. So yeah, it's got some good scares. Got some good tone. It's got. Let me see the actual actors. I forgot to pull it up. So you haven't seen any of it, none of the seasons of True Detective?
I have not. I've only seen memes of Woody Harrelson being upset that McConaughey is saying a bunch of weird shit.
Yeah, he's like, I just want you to stop saying weird shit. Like, this town is dead. It's like a ghost of town, and there's people walking around like dead zombies. I just want you to stop saying weird shit. So, Night Country stars Jodie Foster, obviously, one of her first TV roles, one of her first times playing, authoritative person in law enforcement since Silence of the Lambs. We have a new-ish actress in this who was one of her first roles, Kelly Reese. Apparently, she was a professional boxer in her past profession in 2-way classes. Let's see what else she's been in. Catch the Fair One. This is her first major role, and she's absolutely killing it. She's like the partner. She's Jodie Foster's partner, and so she's pretty much in every scene. She's doing a very good job in that. Also Fiona Shaw, who people might know from Fleabag and many other things. If you just Google her name, she's like, oh yes, I know her face. Killing Eve. She was in Andor. Let's see. Yeah.
Fucking Harry Potter's aunt.
Harry Potter's aunt. Exactly. John Hawks is also in this, and Christopher Eccleston, the doctor number 9, who is just the first season there. So yeah, very cool. Should finish up next week. So I'll be catching up with that. There was that TV side, pretty much it. Let's go to you. Let's flop over to you. Lisa Frankenstein is something we both checked out this week. This is the new Diablo Cody joint. She obviously did the, what was the movie she did? Jennifer's Body. Jennifer's Body is the one that's most like this movie. Were you a Diablo Cody fan before this?
I'm a really big Diablo Cody fan. One of my favorite screenwriters. I'm a huge fan of both Gino and Jennifer's Body.
Yeah, I was as well. I didn't catch up with Jennifer's Body until I think last year or the year before. But yeah, very much enjoyed that. Let's see. What else did she do? I know she's done a few things. Juno and Jennifer's Body, and
Young Adult, Ricky and the Flash.
Ricky and the Flash, yep. Yeah, uncredited apparently on the Evil Dead remake in 2013. Yes, so there's that. Lisa Frankenstein stars Catherine Newton. She was in Quantumania from this past year, apparently in Big Little Lies. Mm-hmm. Cole Sprouse.
Also starring in My Dreams, because I have a big crush on her.
All right, is she? Okay, yeah. Okay. I was going to say, like, is she legal? I was like, yeah, she's 27. Okay.
She's 27, my guy. Get out of here.
We got her in this. We got Cody from Zack and Cody, show, right? What was the show called? The Sweet Life
Zach of Zach and Cody's
The Sweet Life of Zach and Cody.
And then of course The Sweet Life on Deck, you know.
Yes, of course.
I was a little too old for that, but yeah.
As the creature, what did you think of Lisa Frankenstein?
You know, it was pretty good. I think, you know, I'm kind of hedging my bet. Also, we should mention that it's the directorial debut of Zelda Williams, who, of course, other than being a voice actor and actress in her own right, is the daughter of Robin Williams and is named after the best video game series of all time. That's a fact. Yeah, you know, me being a fan of Jennifer's Body and kind of this surreal teen girl style that, Diablo Cody was kind of returning to, I was pretty stoked on it. I almost put it on my most anticipated list. I didn't quite make it, and I liked it, but I didn't love it. I thought it was pretty fun, pretty clever, great performances, but I don't really know what it was trying to say or what it was about, other than like, hey, isn't this a fun 80s throwback movie? And I'm like, yes, it was enjoyable. And and sometimes that's all you need from a movie, especially like an early February movie. Like, it's like, you know, what else do you need? It was a good fun. I liked it. I liked the performances, good makeup, good acting. I think it's a little ridiculous that Catherine Newton is supposed to be this huge loser.
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay, like, whatever. She's, like, the coolest person in the world. And, like, her sister's, like, who is, like, you know, a cool, attractive, like, you know, character in her own right. But I'm like, how is she cooler than you? Like, how is everyone like, wow, if you're only hot like your sister, I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. She's got glasses and a ponytail.
Yeah, that thing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, let me just quote I'm going to quote my review on Letterboxd, which is a quote from Dave Chen's review. A tragic misfire. So much of comedy depends on chemistry and timing. This movie frames most of its scenes in a two-shot with very few cuts, and one of its main characters literally can't speak. The result is a dialogue that feels like it's grasping it for life, and a plot that feels overlong even at 100 minutes of runtime. A movie that died in the edit, and I have to agree wholeheartedly. Like, the other guy, like, I'm so tired of anything like even remotely to do with Frankenstein where the Frankenstein doesn't talk. In the original book, he's very smart. He's very eloquent.
In the original novel by Mary Shelley, actually.
But it's in every remake. Like, why can't they just have the guy talk? And especially in this one.
That's the iconic version.
I give no shits about what the iconic version is, my friend. All right. I give no shits about the most iconic version. Like, this depended on him, like, being, have chemistry with his co-star, and you don't even let the guy talk. It's like, that's ridiculous. But yeah, not funny, not overly gross, not overly sexual, not overly anything. It was just like, okay, this is all kind of weird stuff that's going on, and it's not very funny. And it's just, yeah, okay. Like I said, it wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't Madame Web. It wasn't it wasn't Echo. So, you know, it wasn't terrible.
Fuck you. Echo is great.
I'm gonna keep bringing Echo up every chance I can get.
You can keep being wrong all you want, because Echo is fucking fantastic.
So that was Lisa Frankenstein. Yep, there was that. What else we got? Next up for me, just to mention real quick, the Kingdoms of Dreams and Madness. This is one of my Letterboxd assignments from a few weeks ago that I finally got around to watching. And it's very good. It was a documentary about the making of The Wind Rises, one of the last Ghibli movies, one of the last Hayao Miyazaki movies. Yeah, really well done. I love seeing the I love movies about process. I love movies about an auteur doing his auteur thing. But yeah, highly recommend checking that out. I believe it's streaming on Disney Plus right now. Or maybe it's on HBO Max, one of those. I think HBO Max
it's on Max.
Yeah,
at least it was when I watched it about a year ago.
Yeah.
It's very good. It's a very interesting doc.
It is, yes. So when we go to you, you watched Out of Darkness. Unfortunately, didn't catch this because it was not playing near me, but it was one of yours most anticipated movies of the year. What did you think of Out of the Darkness?
Out of Darkness. Lose the it's cleaner.
Okay.
But yeah, this was cool. This is kind of more my speed for horror movies. Very kind of slow, atmospheric, and one that I really like the premise of, which is just like, yeah, this is a something I've never seen before in a horror movie, which is like it's set in the Paleolithic era. It takes a turn towards the end that I know some people didn't love, but I thought was really fascinating. I thought like it's short, it's compact, and it's one of these movies where just everything is dark, this terror. Apparently it's a very small cast. It was shot at the tail end of lockdown, all within like a mile, I guess, of the hotel. It feels very much like, yeah, this is clearly like a really well done first feature, is the best way I can put it. It's like, yeah, this was a really good indie where you had a really cool idea. One of the things I think is really fascinating about it is, and that I really like, is that since it is set in the 45,000 years ago, they're not speaking any language that actually exists. They're speaking in a language that was invented for the film, and it feels real. It feels like very real, that language. It feels like they're natural speakers of it, even though it doesn't exist. Really visceral, interesting horror film that, I liked what it had to say at the end. The kind of like last twist, I thought was pretty cool. Maybe a little bit nonsensical because of a couple of reasons I won't spoil.
Okay.
But yeah, this was, if you're a fan of horror movies, and if you're a fan of like interesting independent stuff, I would say it's highly worth the watch.
Very cool. How does it compare to something like Prey, which is sort of a similar thing? Like you mentioned, having a language, all of its own. They didn't create a language for Prey. They used the native language. But how did you compare it to something like that?
Particularly in the first half, it feels a lot like Prey. Like, it really gave me similar vibes. It's more of, like, dark and atmospheric than Prey. But with them, like, these group of people being picked off one by one in this forest, you kind of had that vibes. Unlike Prey, though, this is, like, they're newcomers. It's like they're, like, the first Homo sapiens or whatever to come onto this new strange land. And they're just getting picked off in the dark. But yeah, definitely had some similar vibes to that. Here's a monster in the dark getting us. Watch out.
That's cool. It says Out of Darkness. It is playing now. I think it's out in wide release right now in theaters. So check that out. Going back to me, real quick, just want to mention I'm doing the Best Picture winning films of all of them in order. It has been a slog. Most of them are available on HBO Max, I believe. Some of them are on Hulu. I've seen 7 of them so far. Started with Wings, then went to All Quiet on the Western Front. Wings, then Broadway Melody, which was god-awful. That was pretty terrible. So it's basically one. Every other one is okay. Wings
was
good.
What's you and every other ones? Like, it's the same thing with you and Marvel movies.
Marvel movies. Yes, exactly. It is very interesting. One was called Kimmeroon, the one I mentioned having to buy the Blu-ray for. It's fascinating to watch in light of Killers of the Flower Moon coming out this year, because it's also, it's basically a retelling of that, of the sort of how the government opened up the territory for settlement. And that's the reason why they have the college football team in the Sooners, right? The Oklahoma Sooners.
Oh, yeah.
They are that because they were like, okay, so tomorrow at noon, everybody's going to come here and claim your little plot of land. And people came sooner. And that's where the name comes from. They came in the morning and just like, they were like, well, I'm here now. Fuck you. And they're just like, okay.
Yeah. That's what also the end of Far and Away, which is a fucking terrible movie that some people like for some reason, is about.
Yeah. Well, this.
About like Ron Howard's grandparents or whatever.
So just like with Killers of the Flower Moon. I think people really need to have a pretty high level of media literacy, or any media literacy basically at all. So I sent you screenshots of this, and it does a similar thing that Scorsese did, where they're presenting that the events of what happened, which is fucking crazy that they're doing this in 1931, the same year that all basically the events of Killers of the Flower Moon were happening. It is fascinating to watch a movie that was made about those events that were taking place at the same time. I sent you a screenshot of the guy, of some of the dialogue from it, and they're trying to make the main character Yancey Kravitt. They're trying to make him out to be the good guy because this like prospector or this what do you call it? Man of industry comes to him and he's like, son, what we're going to do here is there's a bunch of oil on the land and we're going to take it from the Indians because they don't know what's better for them. So it's literally the same kind of dialogue we saw in Killers of Flower Moon. And Yancey playing, you know, the good guy, the good white man, the sheriff of the town or whatever, says to them, you can't do that. That's wrong. Blah, 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 blah. So it's just very heavy handed, sort of trying to make him out to be the good guy in this. Like you asked me, like, is he supposed to be the good guy? And it's like, yeah, sort of, you know, he's supposed to be the you know, Leo character in this. But it is very interesting to see that dynamic in a movie from that early on, like I said, happening around the same time as the events of Killers of Flower Moon. So if you want to see a artifact of that time period and you want to see a framing of the events as they're happening, check out Cimarron from 1931.
Cimarron.
Okay. There was that. I watched Cavalcade from 1933, which is just awful. Absolutely awful. Like every other movie is either about war or it's about like fancy dudes in suits going through like 40 years. Cause this is what Cavalcade was about. That was what All Quiet on the Western Front was about. They actually had Mutiny and the Bounty from 35, which was one of the last ones I saw, spanned a couple decades. That was very interesting because I've seen this story told in Looney Tunes. That was my review of it. Like I saw – first time I ever saw Captain Bly Mr. Christian, Lieutenant Fletcher Christian was in Looney Tunes when it was played by Bugs Bunny and Yosemite Sam. But yeah, it was fun. It was a fun little romp, fun, on the high seas sort of jaunt. It is interesting just to like look at this stuff through the lens of like, you know, what was going on then. It was like, you know, the English, going the high seas and we're going to go and we're going to find, you know, the Bahamas and we're going to find the West Indies. And it's like, well, where are the West Indies? Over there near the Bahamas. Okay. Well, who's there? Like, oh, savages. It's like, oh, okay, I see where you're going. I see what's happening here. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, I've seen 7 so far. And like I said, every other one has been decent to middling, I would say. So, yep.
Okay. Yeah, look, it's interesting because, like, looking at, because, you know, based on the ones you mentioned, like those are some of the worst rated ones, you know. Like I'm looking at like Letterboxd ratings, and the bottom three are Broadway Melody, Cimarron, and Cavalcade. So you sound like a lot, like more receptive to that than a lot of people. Like a lot of that movie, people seem to really dislike.
Yeah, I don't know. I just gave it points for, you know, because you watch like Broadway Melody or the other ones, and it's just like this scene happened and then this other scene happened. So I gave it points for having, you know, a fucking narrative, a cohesive, coherent narrative going through.
Yeah, Broadway Melody won because it's like, this is sound film.
Yes.
You know, it was the first, that was the second year they did it, and the year before that was like silent film still, and they're like, That's the whole thing with the Oscars. They're very reactionary to like whatever is like, and movies are going this direction now. You know, like fucking Avatar got nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, so I'm definitely looking forward to getting out of the 30s. I still have some bullshit to get through. The Great Siegfried, The Life of Emile Zola. You Can't Take It With You, and of course the big one, 1939's Gone with the Wind. So hopefully after I get out of the 30s, it should be getting a little bit better. I've already seen Rebecca. I've seen Casablanca, obviously. So I'm going to skip those two. So I'm going to go to How Green Was My Valley, which I think they talked about on Blank Check recently as being one of the better ones of that decade, of the best picture winners of that decade. But I mean,
it beat Citizen Kane, and people are like, it's one of those movies that's people are like, yeah, but Citizen Kane probably should have won, but like also that's a really good movie. It's kind of like, I think, the consensus.
That's what I've heard. But, you know, I've still got some shitty ass looking, Song and Dance, Going My Way, Bing Crosby's, that thing, Hamlet, got all the King's Men. So, yeah, it's just a lot of, Greatest Show on Earth, you know, which obviously inspired Spielberg to make movies. But just a lot of like around the world in 80 days, we're going to go around the world and a balloon. Yeah. So joining me on my journey, I renamed my, my letterbox Midnight Film Pod. So check out my adventures there. So yeah, there's that. Let's go back to you. Yeah. You checked out Orion in the Dark. This is a stop motion animated film, or is it a traditionally animated film?
CG, you know. CG. So this is an interesting one. You know, like Lisa Frankenstein, this is another film from one of my favorite screenwriters, this one being Charlie Kaufman. And yeah, it's a kid's film done for Netflix by Charlie Kaufman. So it's kind of weird. It's got a little bit of that Kaufman weirdness. It's kind of like one of those, there's like different layers that come up over the course of the film to like the storytelling conceit to this, that I think is pretty fascinating. You know, it feels a little derivative of something like an Inside Out, but it's fun. It's a good, just like, hey, what am I watching tonight on Netflix? I'll turn this on. It's, you know, it's cool the way that I think my favorite thing about it is just kind of the way the dark is and other things about the nighttime are personified, and kind of that like way that the night is special, you know, like looking outside at the stars is something really cool. And it has this, it's set in the 90s, so, and the, like the kid is this kid, little kid who's afraid of literally everything, including of course the dark, and this kind of journey that he goes on. But then you find out like later on it's actually like a story that he's telling his daughter, and you know, because she's afraid of the dark, and that's something that happens early on, and it gets even more layered as it go on. But yeah, it's a really fascinating film if you're a fan of, you know, Kaufman's work like Eternal Sunshine and Adaptation. It's not quite on that level, but it's got some interesting ideas just like those ones do.
Yeah, that is wild. That's written by Charlie Kaufman. He did an animated, or he did a stop motion movie called Anomalisa in 2015. I don't know if you saw that.
That movie is fucking bizarre. Is that his directorial debut too, I want to say?
I'm not sure. It was 2015. Did he not direct Adaptation, or was that Spike Jonze? That was Spike Jonze. Yeah,
that was Spike Jonze. Yeah.
Yes. It might have been. Yeah, you might be right about that. Yeah, that was. I think he did.
Yeah, this is a very different animated movie. Very different.
Very different. Yes. Yes. That's cool. All right, I'll be checking that out. That's on Netflix, you said.
Yeah.
Looks right. Yep. All right, so there's that, Lisa Frankenstein. And then I saw the big one, the meme of the week, Madame Web. Saw this in a packed theater. Like I said, I was hoping for, like, you know, a raucous crowd, you know, laughing and cheering at all the meme phrases, you know, like my mom died. My mom had me in the Amazon while she was researching spiders in the Amazon. Oh yeah, we got Dakota Johnson in here, Sydney Sweeney, Isabel Merced, who played Dora the Explorer, like you referenced earlier in the live action Dora the Explorer movie from a few years ago. We got Tahar Rahim playing Ezekiel Sims, one of the worst bad guys I've ever seen in any superhero movie. We got Adam Scott. Oh, there are some. Okay, they're not spoilers, right? But there might be some things you don't want to know. I don't know. This is not going to be sequelized. This is not going to live on. This is not going to be part of the MCU or
well,
the
I'm Sony. Seeing it tomorrow, so don't tell me.
All right. Well,
should I take my headphones off again?
No. There's people playing people in this movie. How about that? there's actors playing.
Well, I've heard
playing
some theories, so I don't say anymore because I don't want
but
to
it's
be confirmed
not gonna
or
even,
denied.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Things happen in this movie. There's allusions to other characters from other properties. Okay. I'll just leave it there. But it's directed by SJ Carlson. What was I going to mention about this guy? One of his first not one of her first things. She
directed by SJ Clarkson.
SJ Clarkson. She directed one of my favorite limited series starring Carey Mulligan called Collateral. One of my favorite whodunit grizzled detective stories. So, you know, talented director, but not like awful script. I think the things people said about this, which isn't a spoiler, massive rewrites. It was supposed to take place in the 90s and they moved it up to 2003. There was all these people were supposed to be playing superheroes throughout it, and they don't really, because that's what they were all brought in to do. I think they were told, I don't think they were told that this was not going to be part of the MCU proper. I thought I think they were drawn in based on just the name Marvel, and they they got bamboozled at the last second. But yeah, terrible. Gave it 1 star. But I know you are much more favorable towards bad movies like that, so I'd be interested to...
No, not the fucking shit like this, just because you don't fucking...
You
just because okay. You hate every movie, Damien, doesn't mean that like I like only bad ones.
Yeah, so that's Mademo Weber. So there's that. Right, let's go back to you.
All right,
you checked cool. out.
Yeah, I'm gonna see this one tomorrow and talk about it on my podcast, Infinity Stones and Dragon Bones. So
I can't wait.
But not
I can't wait
yet.
To hear. Yeah. So did you finish Monarch Legacy of Monsters? I thought you finished last time. You had a couple more to go.
I had like one episode left. I think.
Gotcha. Okay.
Right? Did I didn't finish it last time? Did I? So
I don't know.
No, last time I talked about For All Mankind, which
is that's right. You're right.
Yeah, yes. Those were the two shows I was like binging through. Yes. So. Yeah, Monarch Legacy of Monsters, fucking awesome. My favorite thing from this universe, which has somehow become, other than Marvel, the best like interconnected cinematic universe.
Yep.
And it was cool. It uses Godzilla and these big monsters sparingly, which is how they should be utilized. Does some really cool, weird sci-fi shit like that, you know, expands the lore that was introduced in the movies. You know, once again, you know, you have... you know, father and son playing the same character at multiple times. It's just some really weird, cool sci-fi shit going on in this one that I really had a blast with. I liked all of the characters. The last episode is honestly fantastic. Like, you know, not a spoiler here to say that Godzilla shows up in the end. Yep. In, you know, he shows up a couple times throughout the show, but he has his big Godzilla moment at the end of this, but you see it from a human perspective, which is makes it that much more cool and impressive. So yeah, I think this one is absolutely awesome. I kind of like where they left it, so I don't know if they're going to do a season 2 or not, but I kind of hope they don't, because it would be hard to even continue on with the flashback conceit, because like they pretty much wrap up that storyline. I dug it, and I'm curious to see if this matters at all in Godzilla X Kong,
yeah.
The new legacy of monsters, or whatever the fuck it's going to be called.
Yeah.
the new kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I don't remember what it's called. But yeah, like this one a lot, and would highly recommend it to anybody, if you're a Godzilla fan or not.
Yeah, you know, you've seen all the Godzilla movies, so did this have like a lot in there that you feel like you were... prepped to watch this? Was there a lot of allusions to the movies or not really?
So I think that I watched this in the perfect way, which is having seen all of these movies like 6 years ago and vaguely remembering them. I think that is the absolute perfect way to go into this, because you're like, yeah, this guy, he grows up to be John Goodman. Does he die in Skull Island? I can't really remember. Like, they're talking about all the monsters going to show up in like a big event. Do they cause that? I think maybe Vera Farmiga caused that, and Millie Bobby Brown did it in that movie. Yeah, but did, I don't really remember. So it might be Kurt Russell that does it. I don't remember. So that if you're like me and you kind of remember those movies more or less, then it's going to even enhance the experience, because they are references to it, you know, and they do tie into a lot of that, but it's set in 2015, which is a year after the first Godzilla movie.
Yeah,
at least, you know, the quote-unquote present day timeline. There's all, it's
sure,
also
sure.
set in the like 40s through 60s. Yeah. And there's some like there's some goofy ass shit in this. Like, I'll spoil a small thing, right? There's this fucking scene where they like, because, you know, in those movies we find out like the Earth is hollow, and, you know, there's big monsters living down there or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's a fucking scene in one of the like last like two or three episodes where they like do a full on like it's like a NASA movie where like they're like walking out onto the platform and they're like, we're gonna send these guys, but instead of like sending like being like NASA guys getting shot off in the rocket, they're like, we're gonna send them into the new frontier, the frontier below, and it's so fucking goofy. It's so great.
Oh yeah, so yeah, we'll both actually watch the movie. I might check out the series. So yeah, we'll check back in was it March? I think the end of March. The Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire is coming out. So yeah,
New Empire. All right.
Yeah, that's what that's called. Obviously.
All right. Yeah.
Yes. So we'll be checking back with that when that comes out. So that was your stuff. I checked out Perfect Days. One of the last things I checked out before we hopped on the mics here. It is one of the movies nominated for Best International Feature at the Oscars this year. So need to check out The Perfect Teacher, not A Perfect Teacher,
The Teacher's Lounge.
The Teacher's Lounge, and also Il Camino, one of those Italian movies that always comes out every year that I somehow watch just to watch all the international stuff. So this is Wim Wenders' new movie. This was featured on this week's Film Spotting, where they talked about some of the best movies that take place in Tokyo. They did a top five movies that take place in Tokyo. They mentioned, obviously, Lost in Translation, Jiro Dreams of Sushi, and a few others. But yeah, this is one of my only Wim Wenders movies I've seen. The only one I've other seen was Paris, Texas. This is great. This is a great like meditation on work and taking pride in your work. And I think a lot of people could could learn a lot from that kind of thing. It's a great little like mixture of, you know, the drive my car sort of oeuvre of, you know, just a scene playing out, no music, no sound, no dialogue, just a dude doing his job day in and day out. It's very good. It's a nice little trip down a stream. Highly recommend it. Yeah. Right. Believe that
I haven't seen any Wim Wenders, honestly.
No?
No, I need to. I know I need to.
Yeah. Paris, Texas was very good. Paris, Texas is one of the ones ranked up there on Letterboxd. Wings of Desire from 87 and The American Friend from 1987. Yeah, 1977, actually. Dennis Hopper, Bruno Ganz. Pretty cool. So there's that. What else we got here? You checked out Full Circle. Tell me about this. I've never heard anything about this. Oh, is this the one that's like High and Low?
I don't know. I don't know what that means. I mean, I've heard of High and Low, but I don't know. I've never seen it. So it's the Soderbergh one.
The Soderbergh miniseries. Yeah, it's a miniseries that's vaguely based on the Akira Kurosawa film High and Low.
Oh, yes. It is based on the, yeah, sorry. Yeah, gotcha, it is based on the very loosely based on the Kurosawa High and Low.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's okay. But yeah, this is it's pretty cool. I'm a really big Soderbergh fan. I was excited to see this, so it's done by him, and then Ed Solomon was the writer. So Ed Solomon of Bill and Ted fame does this one, and yeah, it's really interesting. Big ensemble cast. It's one of these things where everyone is kind of connected through coincidence, but kind of through their own machinations. And you know, the title refers to both some like literal circles and the way people are trying to like close things and various curses and stuff like that, or so they believe. I'll leave that up to you if you believe that or not. But it's also just about like how, yeah, like everything we do in the past has a way of kind of coming back around on us full circle, and about how nothing from the past ever stays hidden, how all of these characters, their secrets all come to light. And I really like this one, the way that it has all these kind of different mysteries that are revealed over the course of it, and things are slowly revealed. You're like, this is interesting. And, you know, this thing that it starts to, everything is revealed very slowly. It'll allude to something in one episode, and then like three episodes later, it'll flat out confirm it. I think this one's six episodes long. Really, really stellar ensemble cast here. You know, it's got, of course, Claire Danes, Izzy Beetz, Jim Gaffigan's in here. And then CCH Pounder is really good in this. And then, of course, one of my favorite guys in this, he's actually playing a character named Derek, so I was on board, Timothy Oliphant.
yes, of course. Very cool. Yeah, I love C.J. Pounder. I know that she was in the S.H.I.E.L.D., right, for many years.
Yeah.
That cop show. And I love the there's a clip that goes around TikTok all the time of Dennis from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia doing his C.J. Pounder impression. You can go look that up, but yeah, it's very funny.
It's pretty great. And yeah. D doing hers.
Okay, yeah, no, I can do that. Yeah, let's see.
God damn it, Dutch! What other errands do you have us running for the DA?
What other errands do you have us running for the DA?
Yes. So there was that. They talked about this on the watch. I watch things. What do you call that? Not serendipitously. I watch it through them. I watch the show through the guys on the watch, and they also watch like Monsieur Spade through them. Monsieur Spade is another miniseries from this year that is based on the Dashiell Hammett hard-boiled private detective Sam Spade from the Maltese Falcon. So it's basically Clive Owen playing the same guy that Humphrey Bogart played back then, which is pretty interesting. But why don't you finish up with American Fiction? Was this the last movie you had to see for the Best Picture nominated stuff this year?
Yeah, this was the last one.
Nice.
Like you said, you talked about this last time, and I just missed. I saw the other one instead, Zone of Interest, last time. But yeah, I liked this movie quite a bit. It was just a good comedy. About some interesting subject matter. With once again, I think some pretty spectacular performances. I'm a really big fan of Jeffrey Wright, and to see that was my main interest in seeing the movie, was getting to see Jeffrey Wright in a starring role. Yeah, it's pretty good. I think it falls off a little bit at the end. It doesn't really know how to end, and kind of like ends like four or five times because it's not sure how it should end.
Yeah.
But I generally liked it. I think Sterling K. Brown is absolutely the high point of this movie. I think he gives this great performance as his kind of fuck up gay brother. But yeah, I mean, it's one that I'm like, I just better than average movie. And I think even in a year where I'm like, I don't know if this one stacks up against some of the other great Best Picture nominees from this year, I think I liked every single nominee that got nominated for Best Picture, yeah. Which is something that I usually can't say, because usually you'll have like an Elvis in there or something. But yeah, this year I liked all of the movies. I like that it's about a writer. I connected with it on that level. As quote unquote Monk, I think he's a really cool, iconic character.
Yes, I liked it quite a bit as well. Yeah, I agree with you about the end there. It did sort of end multiple times. It's like, okay, I was getting ready to leave. I was like, wait, oh, okay. It had an ending that was very similar. I think the director, Cord Jefferson, talked about this, about his the influences on a lot of the movie itself, but especially near the end where, they're making the movie based on the book, and it ends in a very similar way. If you've ever seen The Player, the Robert Altman movie, The Player, from the early 90s, I believe, has similar tones there for the ending. what was the other one called? Hollywood Hustle? Hollywood Shuffle, I think one of those. Very similar tones and sort of plot beats there. So if you've seen those, it has very similar beats there. Yeah, it was good. Yeah, like you said, probably liked the other ones better. Maybe Maestro might be below it for the 10 slot.
I thought you loved Maestro. Wasn't it like your number 5 movie of the year or something?
It's number 5 movie of the year, but number 8 for the Best Picture stuff there.
Wait a minute. Wait, how does that... Wait, okay. You're going to have to explain that to me.
No, I don't.
How are there... Okay.
I don't.
Logically, that doesn't seem to check out when there's...
Yeah.
There's 3 movies that are better than it in the Best Picture race, but it's better than all of those movies overall?
Correct. Yep, you got it.
Okay. Well, okay. All right.
Yep.
Okay, that doesn't make any sense to me, but I guess...
Girl math. That's how that works. Girl math.
Oh, my God.
All right, so that was your last thing there. So yeah. Let's move on to Letterboxd assignments. Last time I saw the thing... I saw the thing I was given last time, I should say, Sanctuary. I've wanted to watch this for a while now. I've seen these two actors in a lot of things. I've liked them in quite a few things. These two actors being Christopher Abbott, who was in Christopher Abbott and Margot Qualley, which I mentioned them both being in Poor Things from this year. Christopher Abbott was in First Man as David Scott. He was in a movie called Possessor from 2020. He was in It Comes at Night. So he's this actor. People know him. He's very, he can just fill in a lot of different roles. He can slide in a lot of different roles. He was in On the Count of Three, a very, funny drama, like a dramedy from 2021. Let's see what else he was in. Most Violent Year. Yeah, he's been in quite a few things. He was very good in this. It was like a very cool, like, thriller, psychological thriller, where guy, like a CEO or a new coming CEO, has a relationship with a dominatrix, and it gets into these moments where you don't really know what's real, and you don't know like what each person has on the other, and they have this script at the beginning that's they're supposed to be following throughout, and it's one of those things where it's all like scripted, and you're not sure what was scripted and what wasn't, and it's very good. Highly recommend checking that out. It's like 96 minutes. It's on streaming right now on Hulu, so definitely check that one out.
Okay.
And your assignment was the Velocipastor. What did you think of the Velocipastor?
It was fucking great, man.
Yeah.
It was so stupid. I loved it so much. Yeah. Like it you know, it's clearly done to be a movie in the style of a so bad that it's good movie. But unlike, you know, The Room or something like that, it's done with intention. So I think it is actually a little bit more watchable than something like that, because it does actually, you know, have like a plot that flows and, you know, connects. And even though it is like ridiculous and over the top and, you know, it's intentionally quote unquote bad at a lot of times, you know, exactly. It's so much fun. Like, it's one of those things that's just like, yeah, this is very stupid. It's about a pastor who fucking transforms into a velociraptor. Like, it's fucking great, you know? Like, what more could you ask? And like, it'll have just like flashback scenes for characters, and like, it'll be like just cheesy big long thing, and they'll just like die a second later, so like, that doesn't matter. It's so fucking funny. Like, it, like, right from the jump, like, you know what you're in for, because it starts with like the character, like, he's like, hey, mom and daddy, looks outside, and then it just like cuts back to them, and it just says like, VFX shot car on fire, and he's like, no. it's so fucking stupid.
It's amazing.
So if you love like just good low budget bullshit, like, this one is so fun.
Nice. All right.
A Man of the Claw is the fucking tagline for this movie.
Awesome. They were watching something similar on Corridor Crew this week's Corridor Crew episode. About where they break down, you know, CGI and how it's done, and mixtures of practical effects and stuff like that. And they were talking about Cocaine Bear and the scenes they were showing, the scenes they were going through. Definitely make me want to check that out. So I'll be watching that this week. Yeah, they were actually going through them. And I don't know if you've seen Naiad yet, but
not yet.
Yeah, they were talking about how they filmed that in, like, similarly to like Avatar, where they'll film the whole thing in this giant, you know, 60,000 gallon tank of water. And what they did was, because the tank, they could simulate waves, but only so much. So they filmed everything with her actually in water and the boat there, and them actually pretending to be in a boat. But then they had to like pretty much recreate the entire water. All of the water you see in Naiad is basically CGI. The only thing real is her being wet. Like, she's actually, what's her name? I forgot the actress that plays her, but she's actually in the water, obviously. But then it's just wild that they had to recreate pretty much every frame of that movie based on just the water. You know, it's crazy.
Absolutely. That's pretty incredible, honestly.
Yeah. So there's that. So yeah, let's go to our watch list and hit shuffle, and we'll see what we get for next time. Hit shuffle on mine, and I get The Foot Fist Way. Very similar.
Oh,
yeah, similar in that, you know, same budget as VelociPastor, honestly. obviously, one of Danny McBride's first roles, directed by his buddy Jody Hill, which they would have a very successful time there later on. But yeah, should be pretty cool. It's called The synopsis is, an inept Taekwondo instructor struggles with marital troubles and an unhealthy obsession with fellow Taekwondo enthusiast Chuck the Truck Williams. 83 minutes, so I'll be using that to pad out my one a day. Oh yeah, my one movie per day is going pretty well. I think I'm two or three ahead at this point. I've seen 50 movies, which I actually went back the other day. Check my stats from last year, and apparently, Derek, I saw my 50th movie in June last year, and I just passed 50 the other day. So. Quite a bit ahead than it was last year. Do you know offhand how many movies you've seen this year? I could pull it up if you have it.
I'm pulling up the Letterboxd speak.
Yep.
I've seen 38. So 38. You know,
okay.
That's a little bit off the pace, but
off the pace.
Know,
yes.
I wasn't necessarily going for a film a day this year, but you know,
yeah,
we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's definitely still within range of hitting that before the end of the year. So yeah, you go to your watch list, hit shuffle, and tell me what you get, bud.
Yep. And boom, 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 excluding films that I can't stream anywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. One of the few Chris Nolan movies I have not actually seen, and that is Insomnia.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I haven't seen that one either.
Okay. This will be interesting.
Nice, yeah.
Al Pacino, Robin Williams, Hilary Swank. All right. It's like about a cop who can't go to sleep. Oh, I can't sleep. Oh my God, what are you going to do? Oh, whoa, whoa.
Nice. I heard you
get some sleep, Babu. Nadu, nadu. That's probably how it goes.
I'm wondering if it's going to be like, what was the one we watched? The movie that we both had to watch because we both lost a bet to each other. The Snowman.
Snowman?
Yeah, I wonder if it's better than that. It's got to be, right?
It's probably going to be better than that. People like Insomnia a lot.
Yeah, I've heard. I heard what they had. All right, so we got to watch those four next time. And for next time, guys, Dune 2, baby, in IMAX. I already got my tickets, baby. Quizax Hadarach, baby. Shai Haldul. Austin Butler. Sfayad Ratha. Oh, baby. Oh. I'm gonna kill that Kuzak Hardlock, brother. Give me the shot, I'll do it, baby. Ha ha. Dune 2. I'm actually fucking so jazzed. Oh my God. I can't even tell you how jazzed
I am. I mean, I'm excited. You had it like your number one. I had it like my number nine. But
yes.
Damien, we have Dune at home. I'm texting you right now. We have Dune at home.
Okay. Let me know what that is.
I just texted you.
Okay, let me see.
Take a look at your phone. I just texted you. We have Dune at home.
We have Dune at home. What do we got? Oh Jesus. what's his name? David Lynch's Dune, which was the entire book. They filmed the entire book. Sting played in the original, in the David Lynch original. Sting played Fayed Ratha in a in a very revealing outfit. I wonder if we're going to be seeing Austin Butler also in a metal thong.
One can hope.
Hope. Yeah. Did you see the pictures from the world premiere of Dune 2?
When Zendaya was wearing like a Metropolis thing or whatever.
It's like, what the fuck? All right. I mean, you must have to get bored doing that stuff. I think that's like probably the third or fourth promo they've done already for that movie that's not even out yet. So I can imagine you probably get pretty bored trying to find ways to entertain yourself and the crowd by doing that stuff.
Also, it's so fucking weird that this movie is coming out in March. Like, I get it because like it got delayed, but it's like, push it back two more months and have it come out in May. Like, have it come out in the summer. Like, it's so weird that this movie that is both like a contender for like a huge box office and for awards is coming out in fucking March. Like, I can't think of another time that's ever happened.
Yeah, no, I can't either. And one effect from it is that they are going to be releasing the movie. I don't know if it's wide, but I know you can pre-order the Blu-ray right now, which is going to come out in early April. I think you can get them delivered for early April now if you order them right now, which is probably an effect from whatever warehouse they contracted them those out through. They probably started them, you know, based on the original release date, which was, you know, November or December last year, right? So they probably already had those made up and ready to go, and they probably had the warehouse filled, so they can't delay the actual distribution, which, again, like you said, it's fucking crazy that they would release it in March and then have the fucking Blu-rays out, you know, ready to go a month later. So it's like, all right, you know, am I gonna spend $24 on an IMAX ticket? No, I'm gonna wait, you know, a month for the Blu-ray to come out. It's probably gonna eat into some of their sales, yeah, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, honestly,
yes.
I mean, yeah. The thing is too, like last time, you know, it was during fucking like when a bunch of theaters were still closed, yeah. HBO, it came out day and date on Max, you know,
yeah,
or HBO as it was still known at the time, HBO Max.
Yeah, it's Max, the one to watch for HBO.
Yeah, lose the HBO, it's cleaner.
All right, so there's that. Let's do plugs. Go to Medium. I did actually sit my ass down and force myself to output a couple of things. One of them being the best books of 2023. That's on my Medium blog. You can go there, check that out. And also the best movies of 2023. It says it's a 12-minute read, but I'm sure it's actually shorter than that. Best movies of 2023. I have that on there. The honorable mentions, a bunch of other things I talked about in there. So go to damian.sherman.medium.com to check that out. Go to Letterboxd, like I said, renamed it to Fit with the Brand, Midnight Film Pod. I'm 31 away from 300 followers. I'm very active on there. Respond to any comments. I'm also on the Letterboxd Discord. You can check me out there. I'm always hanging around there. Put my profile there. Follow me from there. Follow me on, I'm doing a bunch of TikToks as well. Put a few out over the past couple days. Just my jaunts out to the theater. I showed Derek one. He's like, what is that white stuff? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we
don't get,
man.
That down here.
That's the sacrifice I make for you guys to put my long johns on. That's what I forgot to tell you. I'm wearing long johns now pretty much all the time just to go out, trek out into the wilderness, go see a movie now. That's what you got to do over here, bud.
I've never worn a long johns in my entire life.
Yeah, I was wondering if you knew even what that was. Long johns.
Like, over long is johns? It like furry overalls or something?
Yes, exactly. It has a tail. Okay. Yes. No. It's basically just, if you've ever seen.
I didn't mean like furry, like fucking like you jerk off to like fucking like Robin Hood or some shit like that. I meant like
Robin Hood.
Like they're like, yeah, the, like that's the animated movie that turned everyone to a furry. Like, oh, the, okay. Yeah, the animated one with like Maid Marian and the foxes and whatever.
I mean, for me, it was Space Jam. It was the lady
Lola.
Lola, thank you. Yes, exactly. No. Long johns are, if you've ever seen, like, think back to the movie with the guy in the bed, the chocolate factory.
Oh, yeah.
Chocolate factory, and his uncle's in bed. And when he jumps out, he's wearing those, you know, long johns. It's a whole thing. Yeah. I don't have the one piece. I don't have it like, I don't wear the entire thing. It's just goes over your underwear, but under your pants. So you're not frozen walking back and forth. Yes.
All right.
Anyways, what was I doing? What was I talking about? Medium blog. Oh, go to my TikToks. I'm making TikToks pretty much every day. Put out my music stuff. Put out the stuff I'm listening to. Made one about movies, best movies. Probably not going to do videos. I try to do videos, but then, I don't know, the audio sounds like shit, and I look like shit, so just just doing some stuff over there. So follow me on TikTok. Look up Damian Sherman on there. I'm not sure what it is on there. But, yeah, follow me on Letterboxd and all that stuff. Go film SAS on YouTube, Spotify for podcasters. Like and subscribe. Smash that like button. Go to my interviews from last year and all the stuff for Succession Season 4 and The Bear Season 2. Derek, what do you got to plug?
Yeah, I got to plug my show, Underrated, Underrated Movie Podcast, available wherever this one is. You can listen to it there. Follow us on all the socials. That one comes out every opposite Monday of this show. If you don't get enough of me here, you can hear some more of me over there. And, you know, you can also check out my Patreon, patreon.com/underratedmoviepodcast. And then I do a variety of writing for some other places like Watch Mojo. I do some reviews for Film Threat. Those are finally starting to go up. So I've gotten about 3 or 4 up on that site right now. So go check out some of my writing about some independent films there. That's me.
Thanks, very cool. So for Midnight Film Society Podcast, I've been Damien.
And I've been Derek.
I'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.